Well, for those of you who I have not had the honor to meet yet, my name is Jay Jackson Beckham, and I am the Equity and Inclusion Partner for the Brewers Association. And I am both awed and overjoyed to be introducing you to the first ever Thrive pre-conference workshop. So I'd like to start by asking you all to give yourselves a round of applause for helping this happen. I was also raised in a Southern Baptist church in Virginia, and we do this thing where you have to get up and say hello to somebody that you do not know for a moment, and then sit back down in the spirit of fellowship. So please get up and say hello to somebody you do not know. I'm going to start with a little bit of table setting and a little bit of housekeeping for the day. So first and probably most important thing is, how is this whole spiel going to work? The best way to take a look at what the agenda is for today is actually to download the Craft Brewers Conference app from the Apple Store or from the Google Play Store. Once you download the app and you click Education, you'll see Thrive Workshop. And at the bottom of the description of the workshop, there's a link to the agenda for today. So you can have the PDF of our agenda for today in your hands at all times, and that will be helpful. But I'll give you a broad overview, and then I'm going to introduce you to some people who will help you out if you are looking on your way. First thing you should know about Thrive Workshop is that there is a lot of concurrent sessions, so you will have to make some choices about where you want to be during what part of the day. The good news is most things will be recorded, and so that you can go back and watch them later. This is the main room, so this is kind of home base. We'll come back here throughout the day. We'll start here. We'll have our wonderful keynote address here. We'll come back here for lunch, and then we'll close the day here for closing remarks. There are three other rooms that are part of Thrive. There's a breakout room right behind me. There are two rooms if you go out in the hallway around the corner, and they're right over here. Right. Room L100AB is where those micro-consulting sessions are going to be happening. So those of you who signed up for micro-consulting or who want to try to slide into a slot for the afternoon, L100AB is the location for that. L100CD is another breakout, and I'm losing my letters. The other one is right behind me. All right. When we close in here today, I'll let you know kind of where things are happening. But again, the PDF that you can link to from the app is probably the easiest way to do that. The second piece of housekeeping I want to do is just to establish a little bit of framing and mental space for what we're doing today. I like to call spaces like these brave spaces. Today I want to define the Thrive Workshop and this group of people as existing in a brave space. For me, a brave space is one in which everyone feels able and empowered and safe to say and hear difficult things. Because we probably will say and hear some difficult things today, and we need to offer each other a little bit of grace and a little bit of community. So I'd like to together kind of affirm that we are all going to coexist in a brave space. I also think it's really important to establish a mindset of learning. So I'd like to give you all just a couple of moments to think about one thing that you'd love to learn before you leave here today. And if you're a person like me and you have a little note, jot that down, right? What's just one thing you'd love to leave here learning today? And then similarly, what is one thing you want to teach us today? What is one thing you have to teach? So I want to tell you just a little bit about the origins of Thrive and hopefully a little bit about where we're going. I come from a career in higher education. I like to call myself a recovering academic. And I spent a lot of time studying things like social justice and social theory. And as an undergrad, I read Carol Hanisch's The Personal is Political. For those of you who are students of feminism know, this was a way that she was able to frame social justice work as something that is not just taking place in the halls of Congress, not just taking place in the public spaces that are kind of set aside for political discourse, but happen right in our homes and in our kitchens and in our schools and in our everyday relationships. And, you know, I think one of the things that I'd like to do is maybe reframe that a little bit, because I personally went on this journey recently thinking about work-life balance, right? How many of you have thought about work-life balance recently? Yeah. You know, and part of the reason I left higher education was because I thought my work-life balance was way off. And it didn't get better because I happened to leave higher ed right when COVID kicked off. And then most of you know, our nation was thrown into an incredibly turbulent reckoning right here in Minneapolis after the murder of George Floyd. And, you know, I was trying to work and I was trying to do this balance thing, and I got to this point where I thought I couldn't make it personal because my personal experience was so turbulent during these past 2 years. Right? I was just like, I have to cordon off my work from my personal life, because if not, my work would suffer. What I started to realize was that was the exact wrong approach. Right? It was the exact wrong approach. Because one of the things that I have learned first was being a person who advocates for diversity, equity, and inclusion in our industry, was that it was really, really hard to do that work when I was not well. And as I walked around looking and talking at the people in this industry who were trying to do the same, trying to stay open, trying to take care of their employees, I realized that when they were understaffed, they didn't have the bandwidth or the systems to make progress. And so what I started to see was this group of buckets, right? The diversity, equity, and inclusion work and advocacy, the human resources, policy, and structure, and wellness, mental and physical wellness, that were all dependent on each other, but the connections weren't there, right? And so that's where Thrive comes from, a realization that it's hard to advocate for social justice when you don't have policy in HR or systems of training to hang it on. And if no one is well, you're not getting anywhere, because what is human resources and diversity, equity, and inclusion other than giving a damn about the welfare of the people around you and the communities that you exist in? So Thrive today and into the future is going to be an effort to realize the intersections between diversity, equity, and inclusion work, human resources, and mental and physical wellness in such a way that we establish thriving human beings as a cornerstone of this industry. Right? We have done safety. We have done quality. We have done sustainability. We are now going to do people. So I want to introduce a couple people to you who are going to be involved in this work at the Brewers Association, who I'm really excited to introduce you to today. Some of the things that came out of these turbulent 2 years is a recognition on the part of your Brewers Association that you all need more support with regard to human resources. And so I am so excited to introduce to you the first ever human resources partner, Holly Haslam, and the chair of our first human resources committee, Betty Bolas.
Thank you, Jay. So I'll introduce myself real quick, and then I'll pass the mic over to Betty. I am Holly Haslam, and I am the Brewers Association's new human resources partner. I know that a lot of our members are managing HR from a place that maybe they don't have a formal structure for, and whoever is managing HR is probably wearing multiple other hats at the same time. And prior to joining the Brewers Association, that was my experience too. Most of the organizations that I've worked in prior to myself did not have a formal HR person. So I fully understand how challenging it can be to manage HR when you don't necessarily have the resources to do so. So as the HR partner, my goal is to produce resources for you to use that you can put to work immediately in your breweries. Betty and I will be working together on an HR committee that will help us gauge what resources are needed most immediately. If anyone has any interest in participating in that committee, please come see us afterwards. We're happy to chat with you about that. And we look forward to putting some tools together to help your teams thrive in the workplace.
Hi, I'm Betty Bolus. I am with Fibonacci Brewing Company in Cincinnati, Ohio, and was elected to the board about a year and a half ago as the second taproom's representative. So we've been growing that class. My brewery's a one-barrel system, so we're one of the smallest in the country. But at the same time we had our brewery, I was working as a senior director in human resources. So for a major nonprofit at the time. And then, you know, after you do something like that for 4 years, eventually you can't keep doing the two-job thing. So I was able to just work for our brewery. And through all of this, have realized a lot of the areas where breweries need assistance, especially within smaller breweries that don't have the HR staff and resources. And then I had also done some DEI work and some DEI certifications for our brewery and the nonprofit. So I'm really looking forward to helping Holly and having our committee, and definitely anyone who's interested, we'd like to hear from you. So thanks.
You already know who I am, but so I'm going to go ahead and introduce Virginia Morrison. Virginia is the chair of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, which also has four subcommittees. Virginia is also a member of the board of directors, so I'm just going to ask her to come up here and say hello.
Hello, thriving people. Oh, God. If I look out at all of your faces, I might choke up and cry because I have so much passion for this work. I am a recovering lawyer. Jay's recovering academic. I still have my legal practice, but when I did do employment law, this was my passion, was diversity, equity, and inclusion, and then in the workplace. So for me, this is such a dream come true. I'm with Second Chance Beer Company out of San Diego, California, and I also was elected at the same time as Betty, so relatively new to the board, but I'm... you know, one of the reasons I wanted to get onto the board was because I wanted to work with this woman and the work that we are doing in our subcommittees, and now what Betty and Holly are going to be doing, I think is going to enrich all of our lives so that we can and our teams can thrive. So I'm really looking forward to this day, and I look forward to meeting a lot more of you.
So when we had our conversations about bringing the Craft Brewers Conference to Minneapolis, there were two things that I felt were absolutely critical that we should do in this city at this time in American history. One, I thought that it was really important that we leverage the massive economic engine that a conference this size is to doing some community engagement work while we're here. You're going to hear a little bit more about what we're doing in that capacity later on today and throughout the conference. But probably more importantly, I thought it was absolutely critical that we as conference goers in this city take the opportunity to learn from the people in Minneapolis who have not just survived the last years, but who have thrived these last 2 years as they have been in the middle of one of the greatest social reckonings since our civil rights movement. I am so honored to introduce our keynote speaker for this morning. Scotty Carter is the Executive Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at the Greater Twin Cities United Way. He is a graduate of Howard University in my hometown. He's going to say some things that I think all of us not only need to hear but need to embrace. So I will stop introducing because you should listen to Scotty and not me. Scotty, welcome and thank you so much.
Thank you. Good morning. We can do a little bit better than that. Good morning. Okay. First up, Dr. J, thank you again. Welcome to the Greater Twin Cities. Welcome. Happy Monday. Scotty Carter, the title's on the screen. I know Dr. J did this already, so I'll try not to duplicate it. But for the next so many minutes that we are here together, this is a brave space. I'm saying that now. So as we get through the presentation, through my speech, you understand that you will need to be brave. Because when we were here during that social unrest, we didn't have prep. We didn't have a chance. You kind of had to be ready. And I don't know if you can notice, I'm a black man. I'm often unprepared for the challenges that come ahead. So I invite you by giving you the moment to have a brave space. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I also too grew up in a church background. I also too grew up in a space in which we introduce ourselves. And so I hate to be that guy, but I will be that guy. Can you please go introduce yourself to someone else that you have not met in the room today? Please. All right. Okay. All right. Huh? I can speak louder? Oh, okay. All right. If we can head back to our seats before I run out of time. Thank you. Cool. Thank you, everyone, for introducing yourself to someone you may not have met or somebody who was like, oh, I didn't see you when we first did this 20 minutes ago. Thank you for doing it. The question I would ask is, for some of you, it's rhetorical, not something to say out loud. Not yet. Don't worry. We'll talk to each other later. When I asked you to go meet someone that you had not met before, where did you go? Did you stay within your local space? Did you go away to the back and say, hey, I'm going to talk to people in the back? Did you go to someone you felt comfortable with, that you maybe have met before? Or did you actually find an actual stranger and say, hey, I think we're going to be here for a few days. Let's get to know each other because, I don't know, we might be drinking beer. I don't know. So I would like to share with you one of the mantras that I live by. And at Greater Twin Cities United Way, I lead by, which is nothing grows without the ground being disturbed. Now, as you probably can tell, I'm a talker, and I also like feedback, and I also like to engage. So guess what? I would like for you all to repeat after me. Nothing grows without the ground being disturbed. One more time. Nothing grows without the ground being disturbed. Now, I felt it'd be important to share this mantra with you because it will be the guiding light of our time here today. Because I think it's important that you understand that the difficulties that we go through are so vitally important. Now, many of you in the room are from breweries that, you know, do some amazing things. There's a lot of great small businesses in here as well. And what I hope to encourage you by the end of this is that the D&I perspective, same thing. HR perspective, same thing. Health and wellness, same thing. You actually can thrive. It's actually possible. I'm not here just to give you, some buy your dream or sell your dream. That we actually, here in this room, can make the changes necessary, not just for us, but the people who are connected to us. That's how we grow. That's how we maneuver. Okay? And so, and to be a little self-serving, I thought we'd start with me. So, you'll notice on the far left side, I need to give my dad, who's in Chicago, a little bit of extra good energy, so I thought I'd put him up. But it's me as a kid. And when I was younger, I realized that I always wanted to be in a room with people who were different than me. Like, I grew up in inner city Chicago. So, like, there's a certain type of people you associate with the South Side of Chicago. Y'all don't have to say it. It's okay. But growing up in the city, I realized, like, man, you know, it'd be great if I could connect with other people. And so when I was 13, I actually started a, like, nonprofit youth group in which what we did was we met up with different people from different neighborhoods and we just did events. We just connected. And so what was important to me back then, not that I had diversity, equity, inclusion figured out since like a teenager. No, I just realized that when different perspectives in the room, we get more of a better outcome. That seems simple enough, right? Like, if we're all from the same place, we want to do the same things. We want to go to the same spots we always go to, do the same things we always do. And I learned that, man, if I vary it up, keep it together, we might actually do some things I had never done before. Like ice skating. I had never done ice skating before, and somebody made the suggestion, and I was like, oh, this is fun. I would have never ice skated, ladies and gentlemen, without that group. But you go to college. I go to college, and I go to Hampton University, which is a historically black university, and they teach you how to be prepared for, going out into the real world. And so I learn, as I get into corporate America, that the real world is not really that real. So I share a story with you. So I am working in corporate America. I'm at this conference. And I'm at a booth. And at this booth, I am talking to, different groups of people. And so after I'm done with the booth, my manager, who is a Jewish lady, comes up to me. She says, your disposition is off. You got to remember, you're a big black man. You're going to be scared of you. So when you're at these booths or these conferences, I need for you to stand and minimize yourself. Get smaller because, well, you know, you're going to scare off our clients. And I'm like, damn, really? like, is it that deep? But once again, I'm impressionable. I'm just new into the corporate sphere. So I internalized that. I'm like, okay. And so I transition. I go to law school, go to Howard Law in D.C. And, you know, I'm just figuring out my way. And so right after law school, I would call myself a recovering lawyer, but I didn't practice, so I already avoided that space. Because I saw in law school that, like, maybe not, right? But I'm still in corporate America because that's what I've been taught, right? Like, I have learned how to minimize myself. I've learned how to code switch, which is a way of to survive in an environment that doesn't look like me, that wasn't prepared for me, that wasn't made for me, so I can fit in without losing my culture and my identity. Because like I said, you know, you can look and see I'm black, right? I can never run away from that. No matter, even if you can hear me, you always gonna see me first. So I had to accept that, right? But I'll do whatever is necessary to survive in corporate America. So I get a nice job. I won't mention the company that I was working for. It's pretty big, but out of the law school. And so I learned that diversity and inclusion was always important to me. There was always something to do. But like at the end of the day, it was always an additional something to do. It was always an extracurricular. It was always like, oh yeah, and that. And I really started to call myself, you know, D&I Batman. Because Bruce Wayne, during the day, runs the corporation, does the corporate thing. And at night, or on his off time, he fought crime. And for me, I was doing the night work. And so I pause right here in the story because it's important to note that we decide as people, you know what we're going to do. We have it all figured out. You know, there's a funny thing to say, you know, want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Like, that's a thing that people often say. And so for me, though, I had to realize that I'm doing well, but, like, am I really making the impact that I'm interested in? Because, like, I'm doing the corporate job pretty well, getting paid good money, and I'm helping people. I'm, you know, making a difference. But am I really, truly being impactful? And so, you know, just family moves out here to Minnesota in 2019, and then this is a quote I'd like to bring up to you. It says, life is made of so many moments that mean nothing. And in one day, a single moment comes along to define every second that comes after. Remember I asked about that brave space, right? This is the part. You see, we all have the ability to learn vicariously through others. You don't always have to experience the same things that another person experienced to learn the lesson. And so I encourage everyone in this room to use our moment here dealing with George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd, the social unrest, use that moment to help you to pivot, to push forward, to overcome. Whatever obstacles you're dealing with when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, when it comes to health and wellness, when it comes to HR matters, because I guarantee you, you may not want to be outed like we were here in the Twin Cities. Look at that picture for a second. That's in the middle of a pandemic. There's no vaccine at the point of that photo. As someone who actually got COVID before there was a vaccine, it was the fight of my life. And yet, we have people protesting for that. You know, when we think about that moment, we think about how we literally don't have words. There are not enough words to describe the pain and anguish that is there. Not enough. You know, it all started, well, you know what? Let's actually be even more frank. If you asked a majority of, you know, black and brown people, do they get bothered by the cops? They're going to tell you they know people that actually happened to. They're going to tell you that, yeah, George Floyd situation or murder or how you describe that situation was not a one-off. That wasn't just a bad actor. It wasn't just a situation that happened but never could be recreated. Oh, no. That has been happening for decades, if not centuries. The difference, though, is social media. The difference, though, is that there was, I think she's 18 or 19-year-old lady, young lady who decided to record the event for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. We got to watch someone be modern-day lynched. That's what we, as a community, had to watch, had to see. And so what I'm suggesting to you in the room is that with the advent of social media, your DNI practices could be audited too. You see, it's not just that it was being recorded. Everything is recorded. So when you don't put your people first, it has a fun way of coming out. And I would hope that your situation and where you reside and where your breweries are located would not have to be overrun by emotion, by frustration, by anger. And so think about not just your brewery, but your community. How are you showing up for your community? How are you showing up for your practice? How are you showing up so that people don't have to risk their lives to just tell you that they matter? That's what's important. So it's good to say, or well to say, I mean, I'm not in your industry, but the normal clientele for brewers is what, white male? Is that, does that make sense? I think I'm in the right room, right? And we're also dealing with alcohol, correct? Yeah, maybe. That sounds like a volatile space. If you're not thinking about your wellness, if yourself and your staff, you're not thinking about how you diversify your environment or the people you're connected to, if you don't think about your human resources practices, it's not a matter of if, but when. There's a situation that comes up and you're in the eye of the storm. Don't just think that, you know, police brutality and racial reckoning is only a thing in Minnesota. Like, don't be fooled. And so I want us to sit here because you need to feel it. Use this point in this moment to help you pivot, to help you move forward, to help you decide that I want to stop making excuses about why I can't hire another black individual in my employment. I'm going to stop making excuses for why I can't get HR practices down to have them followed. I want to stop making excuses for why I can't take that mental health break, why I can't go on that vacation, why I can't take time for myself. Because you would wish you had done that if you're on the other side of this. And to further illustrate that point, that's the store that George Floyd was killed in front of, on the left. Now, I would love to tell you that that neighborhood was like all squeaky clean and it was great and it was just all perfect. And then, you know, these militants came in and no, it was an impoverished neighborhood. The police had been into that store, been in that space, has been harassing black and brown individuals way before George Floyd. See, the narrative is real. See, we got outed. You know, we're supposed to be progressive here. Does that look progressive to you? Or does that look like what we see on TV from third world countries? It is vitally important that we learn the lesson now and we pick up and we move. Because if we don't, you'll just, man, I was warned. There's so many different ways of saying this. And so when we think about this, this would be a great time to share about what Great Experience in the United Way did during these moments. You know, I wasn't here yet, but the really great thing about Great Experience in the United Way is that they were here, and they were able to respond. And so they partnered with communities, and it was raised over like $3 million to give out to small businesses who were affected by the riots, to help them recover from a situation that none of us was prepared for. They wanted to not only show up, but be part of something greater, right? And so that's part of the reason why I'm actually working at Great Experience in the United Way, because they had the vision to see that diversity, equity, and inclusion is not just something that we just kind of talk about, something we have to be about. It has to be something that we're actually putting effort and energy and we're going to make it a priority. Because it's a nonprofit, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's not swimming in money. You have to make a decision, and you're going to put something to it. But with that fund and connecting with the small businesses that were affected, we got to learn our community more. And so what we started to do is understanding that, wait a minute, these communities have been impoverished. These communities have they've needed our help long before now. So better late than never, right? But you see I have two pictures on the screen. That's important. Because that's what the stores want to look like in a few years. Better than it's ever looked. Environment around it. More money, more resources are invested in that area. So it's not just a dilapidated space. It's rather a place, a business that despite everything we've been through can be proud. And so I wanted to just us to sit with it and understand that as part of the breweries that you are a part of, that you can also make changes too. And that, you know, it doesn't have to get so bad before it gets so good. Or a better way to put that is, that disturbance, there's a lot of growth that came from that. I hope for you all that you don't have to be disturbed so greatly. That in fact, you take this moment that we're here now and let this be the moment that shakes you to realize that we can't just play about this. Because I'm willing to bet that if you're in this room, you made that choice. You thought that it was important to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, to talk about health and wellness, to talk about HR, to thrive. You thought it was important. And so, you're here. And so, I just wanted us to kind of sit with that. But, like, remember that even though you're disturbed, you do it with a purpose. And so, even though we didn't see George Floyd coming, we use the disturbance to start planting and to start growing and to become greater than we were ever as a city, as the Twin Cities. And we're better before. And I implore you, as you all are here for the week, go see parts of the city, go explore it. We are better because of it. It didn't feel like that at the time. And let me tell you, as a black man, that was uncomfortable. And so I wanted to do something a little different, okay? We've sat in the kind of like, murky spaces. But I'm actually interested more about what you all do as brewers, right? Because, I mean, I did my research and I read some stuff. But I'm just interested in what makes you enter a business such as craft beer making. Like, I'm like, man, that's... what is it? And so can I get like a volunteer to chat with me for a second? Anybody's interested? Okay, I'll take it. So my question for you, what's your name?
Ashley.
Ashley, where are you from?
Vegas.
Ooh, Vegas. Viva La Vegas. Okay, what's the brewery that you're connected to? Okay. Ooh, very nice. So, what is the signature beverage that you're thinking of? You don't have to give it in specifics, just a big idea. Okay. Ooh, I like that. Thank you. Anybody else like to share? See your hand? Sorry. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Yep, you. Yeah, yes. Sorry, I don't have a picker like. What's your name?
Mariel Nelson.
Okay. Where are you from?
Alpine, Wyoming, Melbourne Brewing.
Okay. Tell me about the process of one of your beers. Like one of the ones that you all make in house, like, is it long? How did you even come up with it? What was the...
I'm the HR director.
So you don't have all the secrets is what you're saying. Okay. Okay. Well, how about this? Could you tell me, does it take a long time for them to figure out stuff in terms of things that I mean? Takes a while. Magic and business. Magic, business. I have to come back to that. That's pretty cool. Gentleman, it's on the back. Yes.
Hi, I'm Luke.
Hi, Luke. Where are you from?
I'm from Minneapolis.
Ooh.
I'm from Wisconsin.
Okay. You're here now. What's the brewery that you're connected to? Okay. And are you proud of where you work?
Am I proud of my work?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
A lot of ways, yeah. Tell me something that makes you proud.
I am proud of my staff and the job we have collectively done to build a better community than it was when I first took over. Make people feel more welcome to come in. We worked for management when I took over that did not make people feel as welcome to come in. And collectively, the staff, whether I'm there or not, has done a really, really good job at turning that around. And so I'm just trying to turn that team.
Oh. Thank you. Thank you to you all who participated in talking with me. I know it's kind of random. Be like, hey, you in the back, you know. But the reason why I did that is because, like, it's cultivating a process, right? There's some level of thought that goes into it, and depending on where you started, it's not where you end up finishing. So, like, how are you actively cultivating your people like you do your processes? Remember, nothing grows without the ground being disturbed. How are you cultivating your people? How are you cultivating your environments? How? Just as if you had a signature brew that you came up with and it's magic, as you said. How do you make the magic with your people? How do you make the magic with your environment? It's more than just business. And when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, they tell you there's money actually in being diverse. There's money in being more inclusionary in your practices. There's the stats that tell you as small business owners, if you have a more homely environment, that people are more likely to come visit you. So if you are part of an old management team that doesn't make you more inclusive and you switch over, you welcome a whole new group of people who may not have felt important enough. It's the people. And so I want you all to think about intentionality in that space and how can you be intentional? Okay. So I had to put this in my deck because I thought, well, I mean, obviously black is beautiful, obviously. Let's not even pretend. But I love the idea of connecting with the communities to talk or work towards an issue that is big. And so when you're talking about the Black is Beautiful initiative, and you all are in here, so I'm sure you're familiar with it. My question is, though, why can't we do more than this? Why only this? Why only this? Why is this the thing that we go to, but, oh, hey, I'm doing this. I'm part of it. Or, ooh, I wanted to do it, but, you know, somebody else already did it. Why not work together and think about this on a continual basis? You can. This is not just the idea. It's one idea. It's not the initiative. It's one initiative. And so I'm challenging you to think more broadly about how you show up in your communities. You know, there's a phrase that I use internally with our people, and I say, you know, I want our internal culture to match our external communications. So I wonder, if I come to your brewery, is what I see around, is what y'all do internally? Is how you carry yourself internally? Is how you feel about your people? Feel about diversity and inclusion? Now, if you're like inside, like, no, Scotty, see what happened was you have some story to tell, I'd encourage you to think about, people are looking and paying attention to what you do. And so, I like to kind of, leave time for questions and answers, but I'm an analogy guy, so I like to give analogies again, right? I've been trying to do a whole bunch of those today. So, when you think about diversity and inclusion, for example, I want you to think of it in terms of a marathon. We often use the word journey, but what is the journey? It's indefinite. It's like till you die. Like, you know, there's no markers to that. Rather, I'd like for you to look at it as a marathon. Now, I have never ran a marathon. I've researched it, but I don't know. That feels not for the faint of heart. But what I would suggest to you is that a marathon is doable for those who do it, who practice, they get ready, they run a half marathon first, and they get their shoes ready, they get their routes together, and they do it. And one of the biggest advice I've gotten about running a marathon from people who run marathons is pace setting. It's important to set the pace. And so I encourage you all to look at diversity and inclusion as a marathon. You can do it. It's going to take some training. It's going to take some practice. Now, it's not easy. But there are methods you can use to track your progress, to see how far you've come along, and guess what? You can achieve goals related to D&I. You achieve goals connected to HR. You can achieve goals associated with health and wellness. And as I have learned, if you've ran your first marathon, some people go back for seconds and thirds. And so these processes that we're talking about here aren't just nebulous. They're actually attainable, just with the right structures. And look, I understand the adage of being a small business. That's fair, but it's not an acceptable excuse, because you can find ways, just like you find ways to make your business work, just like you found ways to be connected to where you are and how you build. And so I think, do I have questions? Do I have time for a question or two? I don't. I'm just making sure. I didn't see my voice. I'm looking at you like, I'm going to make sure. Okay, good. So, before I end, I wanted to just take some questions. If anyone have in the room, because I wanted to make sure that I didn't leave you hanging. You know, because I think this is pretty clear. You know, I think so. But I also, me and my team came up with it. So, you know, that's us. But no, but more importantly, I want you all to feel like this is a brave space, that this is the time to ask those questions. If you said, for example, I don't have connections to a DNI practitioner. If you had a question and said, man, I want to know how to do X, Y, and Z, but not sure, we could talk about it. Because we're also in community, too, right now. You realize this, right? You're in this room. You signed up for this workshop. We're in community. So any questions? Okay, Dr. J. Ah, thank you. It's a great question. You know, I look, I'm good for analogies, so I'll try two of them and see if they work. If they land for you, they land for you. I think about that in terms of how you ingratiate or you connect with communities you may not be a part of. It's just like if you was at the bar, you saw someone, you wanted to say hi. You wanted to connect. What would you do? In that space, how do you make connections? How do you build relationships? You know, and the other analogy I think of is, how do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. And so if it's a small engagement, just a quick email, like, hey, like in the neighborhood, like, hey, I know you're, you know, you are in the part of the neighborhood, like, hey, you know, you're a community service group, and I'm a local brewer. We love to do some work with. Let's learn to get to know the community more. We just moved in, right? Because guess what? If you haven't made connection now and you feel guilty about that, the only way you move past that is actually doing the thing. So in this instance, connecting is far better than wishing you had connected. In my line of work, a lot of people are often nervous, scared. They don't want to come off as pandering, as you said, or, you know, I'm only here because of George Floyd. The reality is, you're here now. You are here now. And I guarantee you, being here now matters than being here later. And so, use impetus, jump, be daring, be bold, do it. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to get the best reception. Now that we're still dealing with people, but the onus is off you. And I'm willing to bet that if you reach out and you just try, it won't be as bad as you think. Anybody else has a question? Okay. I saw you. Yeah.
I know a lot of people in this room who also share their experiences, share things that they went through as well, and they have to depending on the audiences and where they are. Mm-hmm. What are some advice that you would do for yourself, or that, you know, the nonprofit does, to kind of protect themselves as they're having to share these stories?
Great question. So, you know, I set myself up for this, right? I set myself up to do this, so I know that I'm going to get the questions that are going to make me go, really? Okay. Or if you had Googled that, you would have known that. Or like, this is like a sitcom from the Cosbys. Like, it's just all the things that come up. And so what I often tell anyone, but specifically people who are being, who are traumatized and being asked to tell these stories again, it is not your responsibility. It isn't. It is not your responsibility nor your charge. Unless you sign up for this, which is, haha, I did, so I don't get butt so mad. But no, it's not on you. The burden is not on you. I make this joke all the time to some people in my office, but like, there's not a black text group that goes around for every issue. Like, oh, okay, this is all our responses about police brutality. Okay, break. Like, there's nothing like that. Like, literally, there's nothing like that. Like, there's not a space. So in these experiences, you can learn, but also wanting to build. But like, that's not on your degree party, because the trauma is real. I'll be candid. Those pictures traumatizing to walk through. Because I remember what I was doing when that liquor store was on fire. And how I thought that maybe someone would come into my house and attack my family. So in those spaces, I'm choosing to be brave to share them with you, but it's not owed to you. It is a privilege to share those spaces. And so if you are a part of a community that is always telling your story, you don't have to. But the caveat to that is, people do need to learn. And the best way we learn sometimes is by stories. And being able to acknowledge when you feel comfortable to share and when you don't, it's all the difference. So, I mean, this is my job, so I'm probably going to be sharing tomorrow. But, you know, if you happen to have a conversation today and don't feel like it, but tomorrow you do, cool. And you have a question? So for me, it's the pace setting. It's the reminding myself, why do I do this? And so for anyone who's in this work, what I encourage people is that if not you, then who? If you don't stand up and fight, then who? For me, when the protests were going on and, you know, all of that, for me, thank you. For me, it was, my protest was this work. This was my protest. To stand up and fight against, you know, systemic racism in some of the in communities and cultures we're a part of, and organizations that we work with, and business partners that we're a part of. Like, but it's like, what am I doing that matters? Am I doing something that matters? And I will tell you, I lay down going to sleep every night feeling fulfilled because I'm doing something that matters. And so if you don't get to do this work like I do all the time, just think about like one moment that you can look back on and like, you know what, that mattered, right? Because we are in the business of changing the world. That's how I feel it. So we are in the business of changing the world. This is what we're here to do. If you're part of a community, you're here to change it. And by changing that community, it's changing the world. And so, once again, I go back to the, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? But you're still eating that elephant. So, okay, you got you, and then I'll get back to you. That's a great question. So for me, what was the turning point? So before I worked at United Way, I did like D&I consulting. I was also working at the corporation I won't name, doing some D&I work for them. on the side. And what I realized was that I couldn't affect change on a larger level, so I had to adjust. Because sometimes when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, or health and wellness, or you know, even HR matters, it's always put behind the back burner between what the business. And I would encourage you that actually if you switch that, the business will be taken care of. And we are so built, our communities are built off these systems. And so I realized, like, man, in order to really affect change, I need more than what I have. And so what I would challenge anyone and say, okay, look at the community you're a part of. What is your reach? How do you commit? Like, are you able to, like, sometimes you can just read something on Google, look it up, take a class, and be competent. And I've taken my share of certifications too. But then you think about, okay, like, no, like, to move this community is going to take more than just myself. So you have to really think about, like, what's your impact, like, who you're trying to impact. But like I said, for some of you, it does just take a certification course and be like, oh, man, like, I did not see this in this viewpoint. Does that answer your question? A little bit? We can talk more about it. Okay. It does. This is one of the times you like you got something in your head and you like, if I yell this out, how it'll be received, right? And so I'm like, whoo, now let's pull that back. No. I don't want to have to convince anybody about my human dignity. And so if we're having a conversation and people can't see the human dignity, what we're talking about, then I don't know if we need to talk to them. Because, brave space, my experience is just one of many, and I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm tired, and I am just one person, and oh, I have a college degree, oh, I'm a lawyer, oh, I have all these different things, and I'm upset. And so when it comes to a space of having to, like, oh, you're going to listen to me because I'm educated? You're going to listen to me because I'm this? No, I'm a human being. And so if you can't see the value in looking to help bring me into a situation, or let me even be more even clear. I'm not worthy of your patronage. I'm not worthy to come and be in your stores. I'm not worthy of drinking your drink. Then am I going to convince you of that? We're having a wrong conversation. And that's, you know, I make this joke quite often. It makes people uncomfortable. But, like, you know, people like me used to be three-fifths of a person. It's still in the Constitution today. It's still, you can read it, right? But don't tell me because I'm sitting on this stage means that we've come so far and we're just ready to go. No, no. Human dignity is so important. That's at the crux of this, is human dignity. So if you go to people who talk about human dignity and say, hey, we care about people, and they need to be convinced of that, then that's a different conversation altogether. And I wanted to piggyback on something we were talking about before. It's okay to pay for things you don't know about. This spot is worth it. Now, I won't tell y'all what I was getting paid before I started doing this. I have been in some really great rooms, and they've paid me a lot of money. There's also people who will pay just to do it, just to come hear you, because they want to help. So there are people in the community who care about the community so much that if you're like, hey, look, this is my budget, they might talk to you. But you don't know that conversation until you actually have it. And we pay for so much other stuff. But we're not paying for our people and the human capital that is important to do it. So, any more questions? Okay, I think I'll take this one to be the last one. Yeah, I think to your point is, like, nobody, it's unreasonable for someone to expect you to know everyone's lived experience. So if you grew up in a rural town of, you know, 12,000 people, and it was like one black family, that makes sense that you may not understand the black experience, but for watching TV. The issue is, are you open to learning about their experiences? Because guess what? If you are a minority or you are other than straight, you have to learn what the predominantly majority issue is. If you're not Christian, you have to learn what those Christian values are to survive in this space. What we should be asking or thinking about is, am I open to being uncomfortable about somebody else's lived experience? Or have I become so insular in myself that I don't want to be uncomfortable? I often share with our staff that, like, in Brave Space, I don't use safe space, but Brave Space, is the idea of learning how to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Because me, personally, as a black man, I am always uncomfortable. On this stage, I am uncomfortable. When I walk out those doors, I am uncomfortable. When I'm in meetings with people who have nothing but, all they do is admire and adore me, I'm still uncomfortable because I am not sure what happens next for me. And so when you don't have to live that way, that's privilege. That's what privilege is. Like, literally, you don't have to be concerned. Doesn't mean you didn't, you know, work to get what you have and all this. It's literally like you don't have to be concerned about things that I have to be concerned and all I was born. Like, I'm not trying to be funny, but, like, I didn't choose to be black. When, like, I was like, all right, God, like, let me, I'm going to pick that. But I'm often penalized for it, as if I did. And let me be clear, I would pick it, because I love being me. I do. I don't want to make it sound like I don't. But in these spaces, we often find that other people don't have spaces to hear my lived experience. Or they don't want to believe me. It's too egregious. So if I told you my police stories, you'd be like, no way, you're an attorney. There's no way that could happen to you. Yeah, way. So I think it's time for me to wrap. And so I'll end with this. First, saying thank you all. Thank you so much for the space. Thank you so much for the time. It means a lot that you are in the room. It means a lot you came to Thrive. I hope that you're able to pick up so much while you're here and nuggets and stuff. Or really, to use the phrase, seeds. So when you are disturbed, you can plant into your ground and it can grow up to be like that big tree. Thank you.